there's something amazing about what St. Paul says in our second reading in the letter to the Philippians, how he just explains living in times of plenty and living without, in figuring out the secret to that. Brothers and sisters, I know how to live in humble circumstances. I know also how to live with abundance. In every circumstance, in all things, I have learned the secret of being well-fed, of going hungry. And what's the secret? The secret is I can do all things in him who strengthens me. It's amazing because we've heard from St. Paul in so many different ways. He's the one who gives that litany of the ways that he's struggled. I was shipwrecked this many times, and I was stoned, and I was beaten by rods, and, you know, attacked by robbers, and he goes through all of these things. So in times of plenty and in times of difficulty and disparagement, he said the secret is, if I'm in Christ, I can do all of these things in times of good and in times of bad. It's amazing, amazing words that we have from St. Paul. Then in our gospel today, one of the big things that's really the main theme for the last few weeks has been about our acceptance or our rejection of God. The wedding feast, the banquet, that's a parable for heaven itself and for those that are invited. And it all hangs off of that very last verse. Many are invited, but few are chosen. You'll notice in that reading how so many people walk away because of their other priorities. One went back to his farm. One went to his business. They're invited to the most important thing, but they still get self-focused on stuff. And I think about it, I pray about it. When I sit there and I see all of you, I wonder so much about your lives, just how different they are. And I think it's like, how do I describe this? How do we integrate it into our lives? And that's been something I've been talking about lately. So that's what I try to figure out. And then of course, I often stumble upon some stories. And so here's another one. So back at Baylor, I was, you know, many of you have had this moment, especially those of you who are with a spouse or a significant other today. But I was sitting in a classroom at Baylor, and there was a girl who sat in the front, and of course I sat in the back. I think I've told you that I've been a reluctant student in my life, so I was at home in the back row most of the time. But she sat up at the front, and it was one of those moments where I was just like, be still my heart. You know, I was just taken with this girl in the front row, and I was just, how do I talk to her? How do I muster up the courage to talk to her? And often when I tell groups of young people this story, I typically remind them that there was no mediation at these times, the ancient times of the 90s. You know, no mediation. This meant that I was mustering up the courage to walk up to her face to face and speak with her without the aid of any sort of device whatsoever. Which is a terrifying, it's as terrifying as it sounds to those of you that are younger. And this goes on, you know, mind you, this isn't like a few days. This is like over the course of a few months that I'm trying to give myself the pep talk to get up and talk to this girl. And the problem was she was always there at school with her best friend, who I call her wing woman. She was always there. And I was thinking, I was like, I can't walk up to both of them and just like talk to one. That would just be ridiculous. You can't do that. And so one fateful day, she comes in and her wing woman is not there that day. For some stroke of, I don't know if she was sick. I don't know why she wasn't there, but she wasn't there. And so I say to myself, you know, it's like, self, today's the day. This might be your only chance. So it's like, now I have to like really muster up the courage, because it's like, this is my only moment. And so class ends, and you can tell how probably attentive to the subject matter I was that day. Not very. So after class, she's walking down the hallway, And I'm probably 10 or 15 feet behind her. And I just was like, Kristen. And she turns around. She's like, yeah. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen the show The Wonder Years before, where there's the narrator in the background kind of describing the subtext of his feelings going on. This is a moment just like that. And so I just blurt out, I just wanted to tell you that I think that you're really pretty. And then it was like, you know, maybe the mushroom cloud or the plane noise, like, yeah, going down. And then it was like, what have I done? And so in that moment, we just exchange a few, like, really awkward, you know, like, remarks back and forth. And sort of like, you know, one of the Peanuts character, you know, from Charlie Brown, I just walked back to my apartment that day with my head hung low. And I was just like, I'm so stupid. And so then I go into my apartment, and I close the door, and in dramatic fashion, I lean against the door, and then all of my roommates are there, and they're like, dude, what happened? I was like, oh, do you remember that girl I was talking about? They're like, yeah. And then I told them what happened. And with all the sensitivity a room full of men could muster, they're like, oh man, yeah, that's terrible. That's the worst thing that you could have possibly done. So they didn't make me feel better at all. And so I tell this story, you know, well, I'll say this first. 2 weeks later, her and her wing woman walked up to me in the hallway and things would change, but that's a story for another time. So you're gonna have to sit on the edge of your seats for that one. But the reason that I tell this story is because I think every one of us at some point in our life has been in that space where they've been rejected. Sometimes epically, like I was in that moment right there. But the feeling is just so difficult and so heavy. You're just like, how am I going to recover from this? And that's what the Lord is describing in the gospel. When people reject the invitation, he gives chance after chance, different servants, different ways of trying to reach out to say, come, you're invited to this amazing, amazing banquet, this wedding feast. And I don't know if you're ever from like, you know, a place like Texas where I had the privilege to live for a while. You know, if you've ever been to an event like a wedding, and on the invitation it's just like black tie is the, you know, is the decor, is the dress, and somebody shows up in, you know, like cowboy boots and jeans and like a hat or something like that. It's like that's the guy who's like not in the wedding garment. And it's a really direct example of somebody that doesn't show honor or respect or prepare themselves for the event, for the importance or the gravity of the event. There's a certain indifference there. I was just talking to the RCIA group just before this, and one of the things I have to remind myself of is the culture that we live in right now. And I usually take out my phone and I say, what's in front of all of these products? iPhone, iPad. I becomes the center of existence, and that's often what we're told out in the world that we live in, that I am the center of my world, my body, my soul, every decision that I have. But that's not the case. And our whole entire Christian life is trying to crack open and figure out how we could actually make God a focal point in our life, somehow, some way to be reminded of him when we go out in this sea of like constant distraction. Now, the young lady that Kristen that I just mentioned to all of you, she died of brain cancer when she was 21 years old. For me, in some way, far beyond my own understanding, in a lot of ways, experiencing her death became a gift in my life, because half my life ago, over 20 years ago, I was shown how short our life could be. But that's the case whether you live to be 95 or 20 years old. It's still short. And we need constant reminders of how short it is. I firmly believe that that's one of the reasons that I'm standing here today, because the Lord allowed me to see that, and I see it all the time. One of the things I've been talking to the school children about, and I'll mention to all of you, is if I walk into your house or I walk into your room, do I know that you're Catholic? Do I know that you're Christian? Would I see it somehow? And now the truth is, for some of you, is I've been to your homes. Like, I'll walk in and I'm greeted by the entire communion of saints. And I'm like, holy cow, this is unbelievable. So some of you have got that nailed. But some of us, I remember I tell this story sometime. When I first got to Baylor, I started to unpack my things. And then before I know it, I turn around and there's a crucifix hanging over my bed. And I was like, Lord, where did you do? Like, I literally, for a moment, I had no idea how it got there. But that was the first thing my mom did when we got to that room, is she reminded me of who I'm supposed to be. And I've moved a lot. So anytime my parents have been there with me on a move, my mom has done something like that. Our church is absolutely saturated with symbols and reminders of our faith. And that's important. And Amanda, our youth minister, is here. And so she's heard this a million times because she teaches the youth and organizes a lot about confirmation. But I say this all the time. But the reason I repeat this is because I was a coach before. And the fundamentals are important. And the only way that you learn the fundamentals is by repeating them and doing them and practicing them until you're so tired of doing them that they are absolutely automatic. Like that, automatic. That's what we're looking for. So we use stuff like this, something that some of you are probably baptized in, this same font. This is a holy water font and water. The Lord uses concrete, real stuff in our life that we know and we're familiar with to give us his grace. Like I said, the definition of a sacrament, the simple definition, is a visible sign of an invisible reality. So he uses visible stuff that we can taste, touch, and see to give us something invisible, his grace into our lives. And we need reminders of that. We need reminders of that constantly. And the Lord's always given people reminders of that. If you remember, he gives to Moses in the desert. He said, build a bronze serpent and put it on a staff. And when anybody's bitten by a serpent, those who look at it will be healed. He uses things we know and understand to give us his grace. We need reminders, because there's way too many reminders of the secular world and way too little reminders of our faith. This can't be the only place that we go that reminds us of our faith. We have to somehow, some way, make it our own so that our sights are set on heaven. Somehow, some way, we need to be reminded that we are all going to die someday. But we want to be with the Lord in heaven. That is the desire. But how do we remind ourselves of that desire? Hopefully, these symbols are something that can help us do that. Remember, there's this great transition that happens in the history of our faith. This great, great transition. Jesus is with his apostles for only 3 years of public ministry. And then what happens? He dies, rises from the dead, and is on the earth for 40 days. And then he's seen by a few hundred of his disciples at this point. But then he's on the road. He's on the road to Emmaus. And he meets two Christians that are talking about the things that happened with Jesus. And the amazing thing is he's him, but they don't recognize him. And so he's like, what are you guys talking about? And then he's like, are you the only one who hasn't heard of these things about Jesus of Nazareth? It's hilarious that Jesus does this. He's like, no, tell me more. You know, and so they start to talk to him. And I say this a ton of times. And three of my best friends in the world are in this room right now. Number one, that guy right there, Jesus Christ, he gets the top slot. And then my two friends, Bobby and Drew, are here today. The same way that I got to know them is the same way we get to know the Lord of the universe, through conversation and time. So those two disciples spend time and speak with Christ on the road, but yet they still don't recognize who he is. Until what? And I know some of you know the answer. Until the breaking of the bread. And then it said, and then he disappeared from their sight. In the breaking of, this is a great, huge transition, because those that knew him in the flesh in that moment, he's about to ascend into heaven to the Father. No longer is humanity going to have Jesus in the flesh in the same way. From that point on, they will only have him in the breaking of the bread, in the Eucharist, on this altar. Although I'm preaching for kind of a long time today, you get a long Eucharistic prayer today because I'm fired up because I was talking about the Holy Spirit in RCIA today. So the oldest Eucharistic prayer that we have is the Roman Canon, Eucharistic prayer number one, with that long list of saints in it. It used to be the only Eucharistic prayer before the Second Vatican Council. That was it. Every day, that was the prayer. That prayer is ancient. The apostles, and then the early church fathers, what we call the apostles to the apostles, they were using that Eucharistic prayer. That's the oldest one we have record of, different pieces and portions of it. It's a super important part of our tradition and our faith, and it's been used for well over 1,000 years to celebrate the Mass, the breaking of the bread, where Christ is truly, really, and substantially present in the Eucharist, us, until he comes again. Somehow, some way, whatever it is that we have to do, whether you change your lock screen to some reminder of your faith, your faith, because you probably have three. There's probably like a phone, a laptop, and like a tablet. So choose one of them and put something on there that's going to remind you of your faith. Or maybe you have a saint's medal, a cross, a crucifix that's collecting dust in a jewelry box. Put it on. Like I said, some of you have the whole communion of saints on your necklace, and I love that. I love to see it every time I distribute communion. But we have to set our sight on God in a daily way so that we're always reminded of him. We have to be. That is the Christian way. For Christ to be integrated and saturated in our life, like St. Paul said. So whether it's times of plenty, of abundance, of goodness, of greatness, or it's times of desolation and hunger, we can do all things through Jesus Christ. God bless you all today.